This program is brought to you by PersonalLifeMedia.com.
Welcome to Dishy Mix. I'm your host, Susan Bratton, and on today's show, you're going to get to meet John Fiore. John is the founder and CEO of a company based out here in the Bay Area called Mind Time. This is going to be interesting to you at two or three levels. It's going to be interesting to you at a personal level because you're going to take a survey and find out exactly what kind of archetype you are. The second thing that it's going to be interesting for you about is collaboration within your own organization, work groups, businesses, even in some of your personal projects. And the third thing that's going to be interesting to you about the Mind Time model is how it's applied this new concept of cognitive targeting to messaging for brands and organizations based on the archetypes that we as humans naturally fall into. So let's get John on the show. He's here with me live in California today, and we'll learn all about the Mind Time model and who you are now. Welcome, John.
Good morning, Susan.
It's great to have you here in person. It's always nice to,
be here.
Look you in the eye.
Yeah, terrific.
Beautiful. So obviously the first place we have to start is give us the level set on the Mind Time model.
Well, you know, it's one of those remarkably simple things that you look at it from the surface and you go like, that can't explain humans. And then you realize that there are so many layers to it. So I'm going to just give you the top layer. And the listeners, you know, welcome once they've taken the survey online to really explore for themselves. There's a lot of information and feedback there. So here it is. When we're not here, when we're not actually physically in our bodies, very much in the now, as the sort of contemporary expression is, when we're not there, where are we? Well, of course, we're off in our thoughts. And when we're off in our thoughts, we're not really paying attention to what's right in front of us. We're paying attention to somewhere else. And that somewhere else is fascinating. Because what we do, and we've known for thousands of years about this, what we do is we disappear off into time. We're either remembering the past, or we're trying to organize the present, or we're imagining a future that hasn't happened yet. So Mind Time, as the name sort of suggests, is where the mind goes when it's not in the physical world, but it's really often its thoughts and its imagination. So each of us, it turns out, actually blends the perspectives of future, present, and past in different proportions. It's sort of like how we mix things up for ourselves in our thinking. And the result of that is, in fact, our thinking. Now, if you consider that this mix of these three different perspectives of the world, you know, my future and my aspirations, the vision I have for it, perhaps an upcoming event, mixed in with my plan, what I'm doing today, what I need to get done, what I committed to getting done, what I've got to finish, those sort of immediately pressing things. And that other part of it, which is, well, how did I get here? What's my life about? Where have I come from? And who am I? What do I understand of this world? So that future, present, and past, as we mix those up, form the genesis of all thought. And when you consider that for human beings, everything that we do begins with a thought, you start to get a little bit of an inkling, a little bit of a clue as to how incredibly important it is for us to actually understand how we blend these three basic perspectives of time. And as we blend them, we create these archetypes. And it's through these very simple archetypes that we begin to understand how we interact as humans and what the world is for us and how we perceive it.
So there's a ratio of past, present, and future time spent in thought that's unique to every single person. But in general, I would imagine it's almost always a blend, but I sense that for many people, they lead with one of those. People live often more in the present, the past, or the future in general. Is that true?
Yes, absolutely, Susan. You've hit the nail on the head. And the fact of the matter is that think of it as this. If you have three glasses and you fill them up when they all have some water in them, together they would collectively add up to 100%. Our mental energy is now being distributed between these three glasses, and the glasses representing variously future, present, and past. So if my glass, and for example, my glass really is the future glass filled up pretty full and past and present, kind of lacking. That means that the very way I look at the world is with a lot of attention spent on the future and the possibilities and the potential and the opportunities. I get very excited. I love communicating. like you might not be able to guess. But when it comes down to that pass aspect, the sort of research and information and what do I really know about things, I really need to rely on other people who've got more of that. So being conscious of, if you will, how my buckets are filled up, how my proportions are actually balanced, gives me the enormous insight that I need to be able to know, well, if this is what I'm bringing to the world, who do I need to reach out to bring their value to the picture so that I don't fall into my own sand trap, as it were, so I don't stumble on my own shortcomings.
So one of the things that I want to encourage you to do is to take the Mind Time survey. And John and I are actually going to be presenting at AdTech New York. And if you're listening to this before early November 2010, and you've gotten this Dishy Mix soon, and you're going to be at AdTech New York, I'll be interviewing John all about this on the stage. And we're encouraging people to take the survey now. You go to mindtimemaps.com/start/AdTech, and then your survey will not only give you your own results about how much time you spend in past, present, and future, but it will also allow us to look at all of the people who are involved in ad tech and where they lay across the entire continuum. John, describe what my listener today is going to see as the result of taking the Mind Time survey, your triangular kind of view.
Yeah, the map.
Because that's interesting.
Yeah,
map.
It is. It's fascinating. You know, it's one of those quirky things that it turns out that because of the nature of time having three component parts, future, present, and past, we can actually create a map by actually drawing a triangle. So if you imagine the triangle in your minds, listeners, and you see this triangle in front of you, in the bottom right-hand corner is future, the top middle is present, and the bottom left is past. When we plot someone in there, we actually use what we think of as our GPS for the mind. It works just like a real GPS out in space. It's what it basically says is, like, given the future signal, the present signal, and the past signal, to what degree are you listening to these three signals? And the GPS triangulates you then and puts you in the map where you're appropriate given the signal strength. And what that does is it means that we can look at groups of people, audiences, communities, societies, organizations, even cultures, whatever group we want to put. We can actually look at them within this map and get an understanding for both the culture, the dynamics, the communication issues, and it's enormously predictive. So what they will see online are really two different things. On the one hand, the first thing is the map, and it's wonderfully exciting, and you can kind of point to the dots and click on them, and you get to learn about the different thinking styles. And you also get a pretty long verbal interpretation. In other words, there's some... Well, I think it was about 120,000 words of writing went into these feedback pieces that we put in there so that people could learn about their own thinking. On top of that, there's also a section called Mind Time Media, which teaches you all about Mind Time and how it actually works and how you can use it to benefit in collaboration, in groups, in relationships, and things like that. So it's a very rich site. It's all free. But the key is that for ad tech, we're going to get an insight into who are you, this audience called ad tech, and how do you necessarily think? And I think we might actually have some fun with that on stage in New York in November. That's what I meant to say.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting, too. It's always fascinating to learn about yourself and to know, you know, where you land on the map. It's also very interesting. Yeah, it's also very interesting to learn about an organization or a group of people. I would imagine, actually, if you looked at the Mind Time map of a group of doctors versus a group of internet marketers, that the potential would be perhaps that the doctors would heavily be more skewed toward the past because they have to be so analytical in the database of human ills and understand what happened in the past and apply it to the future, that they're probably much more living in the past than all the future thinkers of the digital marketing age of, you know, the world of ad tech. They're probably a lot heavier up, potentially, in the future thinking.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. And, you know, one of the interesting things, we started to do a survey of the digital media industry, digital marketing industry this year. And what we wanted to look at was, both based on age and a whole series of different demographics, what has happened within the industry as the digital age came upon us? So those folks who've been in sort of marketing advertising for perhaps, 20, 25 years, Was their thinking style, which is this mix, this archetype, was their thinking style the same as the young'uns who are coming in today and have only been in maybe 5 or 10 years? And it is fascinating. Because when we see the
Is it different? Because I wonder if the young ones are more executionally oriented and less vision oriented.
Again, you've hit it on the head. It's not just execution, though. It's analytical.
Analyticals,
so
yeah.
More past and more present thinking in the new people, the
that
new
makes
tribe
total
coming
sense
in,
to me.
Than the people who used to be, what was it, the advertising show on television, Mad Men. Mad Men, that's it, thank you. Okay, mm-hmm. So Mad Men, those kind of highly creative, genius people that come up with some whacking great big off-the-wall campaign that the client just sits there and goes like, okay, yeah, I'll spend $5 million. That culture is gone. And yet the people who peopled that culture are actually pretty senior in the industry.
Yes.
So we've got this really interesting change of cultural mechanisms, if you will, and quite a lot of angst, I have to say, in the older agencies as they're trying to shift from the old school creative drives to the new school digital analytics and follow through and execution is on a par, if not senior, to creative. And that shift is a very, very real problem for a lot of agencies.
And I want to get into that a little bit later in the show, because what we're really going to talk about is applying the mind time model, the three basic archetypes, and then all the myriad combinations of archetypes that can be in this model. And we're going to apply them to talk about two things. One, collaboration, how a framework can be applied to any team, organization, or what have you. And then also to messaging, how a brand communicates beyond persona marketing into this new kind of cognitive targeting world. But before we do, I want to get a little bit deeper into the actual types, the three types, and how they're different. And I'll just share a little quick personal story, which I thought was kind of interesting. And that is that the minute I met you, John, Brad Behrens introduced us. The minute I met you, I took the survey. And I come out as a person who is living primarily in the present and near future. And that wasn't surprising to me. And then the minute I took it, I said to my husband, Tim, please take this survey. I know you don't like to do stuff like this, but just do it for me, honey. It'll only take a minute. And he came up as being in the past, very analytical, and in the far future. And that's how he tends to think. He takes all the historical information and does an analysis and projects out where the future's going. And he's amazing at it. And I think that's why we get along in our marriage and that we work together, because we are the continuum together.
Yep.
But separately, we kind of fall apart.
Yep.
And it's those complementary skill sets that work really well, which is a perfect segue into how this can be applied at a collaborative level. So first describe the three basic archetypes so people get a framework, and then describe how that lays into teamwork and running a business and the agency of the future, or wherever you want to go with that.
Yeah, lovely. Okay, great. Terrific. Thanks for the opportunity to describe these, because, you know, I think one of the things that we've found really amazing over the years is what makes MindTime unique is it's accessible. Accessible.
You can
people
remember
can
it.
Remember it.
Right.
Yeah.
We talked about Myers-Briggs and like
who remembers
if they're an ENTJ or whatever they are and what that means.
Sure.
Like you can barely remember your own.
And it's not that it's not a really good instrument. It's just it's not accessible.
It's not a useful enough filter. You can't recall it and segment it easily. But if I know that you live most, if I know you're a past and far future,
you got all you need.
That's what I'm going to leverage you for.
So it's this language that is a natural language that we already know that we can use to describe how we're really thinking that makes this extraordinarily useful. So if you can, if all you do is just remember these next few minutes, that's you will change your life. Quite literally, you will start to change the way you look at other people and yourself in relationship to them.
And how you communicate to other people. It's really another form of NLP. To
absolutely.
Me. It's
in
just
fact,
an extension it's, of NLP.
Well, I will tell you, it's the foundation of NLP in
oh,
some ways.
Oh, there you
ways.
Go. Uh-huh.
So it's not a different thing. NLP is the neuro-linguistic program that comes out of the very perspectives we use in our thinking. So let's describe them. I'm going to start with the future one. So the future is literally about the future. And you don't have to learn anything new here, nothing conceptually or no language. Think about standing on the edge of today, looking forward into the future. The part of our mind that can do that, if you will, is the part of the mind that wants to see the big picture. It is trying to assess What are the possibilities in here? What are the opportunities? The kind of thinking that's happening is very high frequency. It's very bouncing around. It's energetic. It's enthusiastic. It's extroverted. It's extraordinarily articulate. It loves to have an audience. And it likes to use words to describe to that audience something that doesn't exist yet. You see, visionaries, who are typically future thinkers, they have to be, of course, those visionaries, what they're doing essentially is painting in the audience's mind a picture of something that doesn't exist. Now, when you think about that, that takes a lot of enthusiasm. It takes a lot of a certain quality of energy, which we think of as persuasion or convincing people. So when future thinkers, this future mind, sees an opportunity or sees a possibility, its job is to excite the energy in the audience around it so that everybody sees it. Then that future thinking gets what it wants. It wants that idea to be born. It doesn't know how to birth the idea. That's not the job of future thinking. That's the job of present thinking. But what it can do is excite the energy in people's minds to the point where people get it. They see it for themselves. They get excited. The idea, if you will, is planted in their own mind, whether they were dominant in future thinking or not, because everybody has some of it. So, future thinking is about cleaving or creating a space in our world for an idea to grow.
Hey, hold that thought. Let's take a break now. We've done future. Let's come back and do present and past and then talk about how it lays into collaboration so I can keep you going and not worry about that. All right. So let's run to a quick break. I always want to thank my sponsors. You know that's the lifeblood of Dishy Mix. And we're going to be right back with John Fury. It's F-U-R-E-Y. He's the founder and CEO of Mind Time. And I want to encourage you again to go to mindtimemaps.com/start/adtech. Take the survey in the ad tech bucket so we can not personally identifiably, of course, completely confidentially, roll you up into that greater map of our organization, or at least our part of our industry. I also want to let you know that I have two free copies of It's All About Time, a guide for executives, entrepreneurs, and everyone else. How People Work and Why Some Do It Better by John Fury. It goes into even more depth about what we're talking. So we'll go to a break, come right back. Hang on. The dream. You're a master interviewer, clear, confident, asking killer questions nobody else ever thought of. Guests swear it's their best interview ever as keen insights are revealed and your raving fans promote your work for you. The reality? Killer questions? You're even boring yourself. Your voice trembles, your palms sweat, and everyone can hear that bubble in your throat. Panic sets in when you think about asking an expert for an interview. Help is here! All you need is masterful interviews, creating profitable content, a system that turns your audience into raving fans who promote your work for you, and how to come up with those killer questions for riveting, profitable information products. Get it now at masterfulinterviews.com and download the free Easy Question Generator mini course today. Now, get $100 off with promo code DISHY at masterfulinterviews.com. We're back with John Fury, CEO and founder of Mind Time. John was just describing to you the future thinker, the one of charisma and the ideas, and you probably, many of you, identified with that yourself. But now let's listen to what the present thinker and the past thinker have to add to the equation. John?
Yes, lovely. Okay, so that future thinker creating the space for the idea. Now, the present thinker, of course, is about actually getting it done. It's only in the present that we can do things. And because of that, this present thinking has the kinds of qualities that are like, I need to finish what I start. I must have a plan. How are we going to organize this? And indeed, it's actually, this is about probability. Because the present thinker is really concerned with the probability of the plan coming out the way that it should. So let's take a very simple example. Let's take a mother-in-law planning her daughter's wedding, or rather the wedding for her daughter and son-in-law, and in the process, her present thinking is going, okay, we don't know whether it's going to rain. There's a 30% probability that it will. So what we're going to do is we're going to put a tent out on the lawn. So if it does, we have a plan B. We don't know if the DJ is going to turn up on time, so let's make sure that the hotel has some piped in music or whatever. Probability is that it will, but maybe 5% probability that it won't, so we will have a backup plan. In other words, what they're trying to do is to assess the likelihood that it's all going to go according to plan and make sure where the probability isn't very good that there is a backup plan, that we know what we're going to do. Because the, if you will, the anathema, the absolute nightmare of a present thinker is to be in a situation where they don't have any plan whatsoever. That's meltdown, that's stress zone. So present thinking is organized, it's planned, it's orchestrated. And you can tell the degree of sort of the span of control of a present thinker really speaks to a lot to how strong they are in this and how intelligently they're using it. So people who can run whole cities or organizations and the administration and the accounting and the processes and the customer service and the follow-through and all of those wonderful things, and I can see it's this like big, big thing that has to happen. People who know how to do that, big present thinkers. Okay, so present thinking is about getting it done. Past thinking. Now, these three, I have to remind you, are very, very different from each other. They are not kind of similar or a little bit different. They are radically different survival concepts. And these three, if you will, forces of thinking, possibility future, probability present, and certainty past, are the mix that goes into creating our ability to survive as human beings. And that certainty one, past thinking, is really about not having enough information is a dangerous thing in of itself. So you mentioned that Tim, for example, has a lot of that past thinking. Well, you know, thank goodness, because having that information and knowing that it is as at a higher probability as possible, accurate, in other words, you know where it came from, you know that this is verified information, it gives you that certainty, it gives you that ability to move forward with a level of conviction that, frankly, you can't really do if you don't have that information. Now, you might see sort of future thinkers leaping off cliffs all the time with their great ideas, but we also see that at the bottom of the cliff, there's an awful lot of bodies lying around. You don't get past thinkers leaping off cliffs and ending up as bodies at the bottom of it. It just doesn't happen. These people play it safe. And it's not because they're sticking the muds. It's because they really understand the consequences of not having the right information. So what they're going to do is this. They are going to look to how can I acquire, how can I get information, knowledge, and more importantly, a deep understanding of the essence of what it is that I'm trying to do before committing my energy, before committing my resources to actually doing it. And in essence, it's like walking backwards into the future. It's like, in order to know where to step behind myself as I walk backwards into the future, I must have the information that tells me where to step. And that's what you were mentioning Tim is doing. He's like laying it out in front of him, but kind of behind him, because he's looking behind him to move forward into the future. So there we have it. We have this possibility-driven future. We have this practical, probability-driven present. And we have this deep developing the understanding of things in the past. And between those three and how we blend them, it creates our archetypes. So, of course, we could be future and a bit of present, which is a future present, or we could be present with a little bit of future, like you are, Susan, or we can be like Tim, strong past and strong future. So the way that we blend these creates this wonderful map of 10 archetypes, of course, because there are only three moving pieces.
So you said 10 archetypes?
Yes.
Is that how it comes out, the past and the future? All the combinations are 10?
All the combinations plus the unobvious one, which is an equal measure of all three, which we call the integrated.
Integrated. Uh-huh. How common is that?
You know, it's pretty much as common as all of the others are.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
If you look at a sort of a distribution curve, you get less common higher at the higher end of intensity. So
yes,
someone who's very,
course.
Very strong future, less common than people who are middling future.
Yeah, yeah. That makes sense.
It does make sense, doesn't it?
So we have these 10 archetypes, and you can build more effective and responsive teams with this. You say that there's really a right mix of thinking styles. Now, of course, that's probably probably partly the right mix for a project or a group who's trying to do something. Depends on what it is they're trying to accomplish most of the time,
very
doesn't it?
Very much so. Yes, indeed.
So how do you go about the process of understanding? Let's just say you take your whole management team or your whole organization and you put them through the MindTime model. And then you have this, you know, this chart, your triangle with the people all over it. Who are you going to fire? Like, you know, how do you see where you're missing people? How do you see people who are in the wrong jobs? How do you get more insight into that? What's a typical scenario?
Yes. Well, you know, that's a great question. And again, I think we have the tendency as humans to want to really make things complicated. So my mission in life is keep it simple. I love that idea of keeping it simple. So it is simple, really simple. When you look at that map, as we call it, the map of the world of thinking, and you have actually had all of your team take the profile, and of course you can, we offer organizations the ability to map and create a group for themselves. What it does is it gives you that map, and when you look at it, you look at the distribution, you go like, where's the hole? Now, the whole is what you don't have. And then you go, well, where's the mass? Where's the density? And that's what you do have. And you can answer then two questions. First of all, you go, the mass, the densest part of the map, is where the cultural center is going to be of my organization. So let's say that my cultural center is strongly future-oriented. And I go like, wow, I have a lot of future-thinking people in my organization. You go, great. Okay, so, ergo, our culture is about vision, inspiration, articulation, persuasion, et cetera, et cetera. Now, if you're in the business of selling, congratulations, you probably have the right mix. You may have some problems over in accounting, and you may have some problems in R&D, but you're going to do good in sales. However, if your cultural center was predominantly future, and you're actually trying to run the Library of Congress, uh-oh, look out. You've got a problem. Because what you've got is a bunch of creative innovators in the midst of an environment that requires organization, orchestration, and understanding. So, the map tells you the culture of the organization. It tells you what your organization will and will not be good at doing. The map also tells you where you have these blind spots or these areas of absence. And let's go back to that example I was just using of the very future-oriented map. And let's say that, in fact, you're our town planning department. And as a town planning department, your job is to make this town run more efficiently, cars move through it more effectively, parking meters collect more money, and all of those good things that town planners like to do. Now, if on that map of your town, the team, there is a rather large hole in that present thinking area, what this tells you is the reason why, as town planners, you're probably going to suck. Because the fact of the matter is, you don't have the mental energy, the basic tools to be able to work at the things that you need to work at. So the first level of awareness in looking at this is what we do and we don't have. It gives us this awareness and this aha moment for most executives going like, wow, that's why that launch didn't work, or that's why our R&D team is always in conflict with our sales department. It makes the unspoken invisible become obvious, because thinking is the great invisible force at work in every organization, society, and culture. And when we get it, that the physical world that we can look at, that we, if you will, it manifests itself in front of our eyes, is only one of the two worlds that is actually operating, and that the other world is an invisible force of thinking and mental energy, and it is just as powerful, if not more powerful, because it's what shapes the physical world. At that point in time, you get it that this map is a map that reveals what is really happening in the organization, because you don't hire people to show up in their bodies. You really hire people to show up with their mental energy and their creativity. So that leads to that really big question, which is, well, how do you then use that to get people collaborating with that creativity? And that's probably one of the most exciting things that MindTime really reveals for us, is how to blend groups, how to actually create a group and create the awareness, the understanding within the group that allows people to work together by understanding the value that they actually bring.
Right. It naturally engenders a level of appreciation and insight into a given individual just by knowing what their map is, right?
Yeah. You know, it's funny, over the years, people have tried to put us into all kinds of buckets as to what kind of business we are. Mm-hmm. And we came to the realization 7-8 years ago that we're actually in the business of creating awareness. That actually is the most profound thing that we do, is we actually switch on a light bulb. And it's been an extraordinarily difficult thing to figure out, how do you actually pay yourself for switching on light bulbs? Well, we think we figured it out now, but we are. It's creating the awareness in your mind of what you're doing and contributing and what you're bringing of value, and then recognizing that others are going to work differently. They're going to feel odd. They may even feel like they're in conflict with you, but they are bringing their value. And when you get that understanding intrapersonally and you clear out the messiness because you take it personally, then you start to create really, really powerful collaboration.
Yeah, that makes total sense. I really like the model a lot. And yet I also want to move on to the messaging piece of it, because you're applying the Mind Time model and your 10 archetypes to getting beyond the persona, the fictitious persona modeling that marketers have been doing to date, and coming up with a new way to understand your customers and to communicate to them in the way that they want to be communicated to. So tell us a little bit more about this whole idea of integrating the models into CRM and marketing and messaging, and how that would look. How would you go beyond doing persona marketing and into this actual use of the maps?
Well, that's a great question. So, you know, typically the creation of a persona, you create them out of gathering a set of data points about you know, your audience, if you will, what people are doing. And those data points essentially are then used to create this fictitious thing called a persona. Well, I like to say, you know, 100 data points do not create a person. So what the model allows us to do is, rather than creating fictitious personas, it allows us to actually look in, at an audience and segment it based on the actual personality of that group of people. So we're segmenting on an archetype basis of reality, not fiction created for one given deployment of a marketing program. And what that allows us to do is, if you think of it as like a value chain, all the way back to the essence of the creative stuff that's being put together by the designers, by the ad creators, to the way that the analysts and the researchers are looking at the audience and the behaviors, let's say, online, to the packaging of the product, to the CRM program. At every stage, the same language, the same understanding, the same insight, the same awareness about your audience is being used by individuals who each individually have that awareness themselves now, so that they understand. So let's take Mavis in the call center. Mavis has a person online, and she knows that the audience segmentation looks like strongly future audience. These were the early adopters of a new launched product. Mavis knows how to talk to this person. She's easily trained. She can actually now, if you will, elicit the brand behavior more authentically, more transparently, than if it was just another person on the telephone who had a problem with the product. So all the way from the creation of products, to the creativity around how they're sold, to the delivery of them, to the packaging of them, to the follow-up and the marketing and the client support, at every step of the way, the same set of archetypes, the same language, the same understanding and insight can be used. And that creates a strength around the brand. It creates an integrity around the brand, which is far beyond what can be achieved with fictitional representations like personas, where Mavis in the call center may not really get what you mean or who you're trying to describe in your persona description. And now she's just going to do the best job that she possibly can.
If you're a brand who's big enough to want to move from persona marketing to mind time archetypes, you probably have a pretty large audience. Wouldn't it be such that it would be distributed across all 10 archetypes? So how would you be able to segment these groups?
Well, that's another great question. Yes, it is likely to be distributed across all of the archetypes. However, I would say that there are other demographics, there's other data points, which, you know, such as demographics, that you could collect, that you would see that actually said, actually, the people who buy it who are in this other demographic are predominantly of this archetype. So archetypes and the sort of personas that they allow us to create is one level of the map. But of course, as soon as we sort of create the cross-section with other existing demographics, it starts to make sense in saying, like, the audience, which is the 24 to 35-year-old female, married, is more predominantly a present audience for our product. The audience over here that is 45 to 54 male in the business environment and predominantly in startups is more of this particular archetype. So what it does is it gives us a standard language. It doesn't in any way nullify the value of understanding demographics. They're very useful for segmenting the audiences for other purposes and for the purpose of then doing like these cross-sections through the Mindtime archetypes themselves. So whilst you do have, if you will, an appearance of all of the different archetypes potentially in a very big distributed audience, it still means that the individual who might be online has a specific thinking style archetype that you can target them individually when they're online with the right ad or the right content. And it also means that certain audiences by demographic, take Facebook, take LinkedIn, might have very specific archetypes given where it is that they flock to in terms of the groups and the social networks they might be a part of. So audiences naturally segment and actually people flock together when they're of a kind. So you actually get that effect happening.
It makes sense. And also, I'm looking at a slide from that Jason Burnham sent me. Now, Jason with Burnham Marketing and Catalyst, John and Corey and Jim at Catalyst SF, they've come together with Mindtime to apply your model to the world of cognitive targeting, right? And they have a new company.
They have a new company. And they've licensed the Mindtime model. And what they're doing is they're going to experiment and play with and create partnerships with other companies, both in the sort of profiling database marketplace, as well as audience segmentation, CRM. And they're going to create relationships to explore the power and the utility of Mindtime. Now, you know, we've done this before. Obviously, we've been playing around with marketing archetypes and things like that for ages. But what's really interesting to us is at the level which Jason and Michelle Burnham will operate and John Durham and the team at Catalyst SF, it really is going to be the first time that Mindtime has been taken seriously as a product, as a methodology and a sort of a basic intellectual property and applied in the development of literal cognitive targeting products to serve the digital marketing industry. And it's very, very exciting because it's already getting the attention of some very big players in the media arena. And what it's going to allow us to do is to learn and learn a great deal about how we can use and the various ways of deploying Mindtime that are going to serve the digital marketing and advertising arena.
There are two images, two slides here from this particular deck. I'm sure you can get, anybody can get it from Jason or from me, email me, and I'll make sure I connect you with Jason. The first one is this idea of cognitive targeting where there are three different ads based on the three core archetypes. So the past thinker ad is, these are for toothpaste, clinically proven the most effective toothpaste against plaque and gum disease, right?
Note it's all the data, the authority behind it, yeah.
Social proof and data.
Yep. Yep.
Historical analysis. And then the one on the top, which I think is oriented toward people in the present, is top value for everybody. So in the moment, best price, it takes care of all the people in my life.
And it's also about the family. This is like one size fits all. It's got utility. It's practical.
And then the one for future thinkers, I can't read the copy, but there's barely any copy. It's just two super happy women lying in the grass looking at each other with a toothbrush full of toothpaste.
Actually, one's a guy, Susan.
It's a guy?
I know we're in San Francisco, but that one there is a guy.
Yeah, doesn't look like a dude to me. So it's about the possibility of delight.
Yep.
Because I have sparkly white teeth.
Yep. It's an emotional play, you know what? And people get just like the future thinkers get sucked into the potential.
The possibility.
I too could be he or she sort of thing.
Yeah, I loved that. And then I was very interested in this other picture where you have the, you know how you have the triangle and you have a bunch of people mapped out on it. What do you call that?
Well, it's a mapping.
Map.
It's a map of a group, yeah.
So it's a group map. That's it. Thank you. So in this group map, what it shows is that some of the customers make seasonal purchases. This group prefers the personal help of experienced salespeople. This person falls off the site between the shopping cart and checkout. This group gives the highest clicks on ad version one. This group way over here is highest clicks on ad version two. You know, so there's all these different scenarios of the way that customers take action or connect with your brand based on where they fall on the overall map.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And this really speaks to what you were asking earlier about, you know, a big brand and surely it has an audience that's distributed across all of the map. Well, indeed. And what you were just describing was, yes, they do. However, when you look at these other data points, demographics and others, you'll see that, hey, the ones over here towards the right, futures, they were the early adopters. The ones who were slowest to the party, they may be clients today, they may be customers today, but they were the last to the party. They're the past group who really needed to see the uptake and the validation and read the critics and the reports and the ratings and et cetera. So it allows you to look at your data and look at your audience and layer another level of intelligence into what the heck is going on, simply by revealing this invisible force of thinking that gives you the ability to predict. And we haven't really used that word in our conversation this morning, but it is the most powerful predictor of human behavior, because everything that we do begins with a thought. And if I can map where in the world of thinking you start your thinking, I can predict your behavior with extraordinary accuracy.
I'm taking that in. That's right. That's the first time I actually thought about it from that level. Okay. I want to talk to you about a couple of other things before the end of the show. The first thing that I want to talk about is, you said earlier in the show that it's taken you many years to figure out the best applications and how you were going to distribute your model so that it was valuable to many people, and that your company has artists and designers and theorists and thinkers, and that, you know, you're a culturally really unique collection of people who've come up with this theoretical framework. It's not even theoretical. It's a absolute framework.
It's real.
It's a real framework.
Einstein said it was. Yeah, you can't separate it from space. It's space hyphen time.
There you go. Beautiful. Yeah, yeah. So I know that you want to accelerate the applications of the mind-time model, and you've been looking for ways to do that. You mentioned to me that one of the things, you can't launch it in every market where it has potential applications, and that Creative Commons has put together this new concept. I'd love you to tell us about this, because I think there are probably many people that listen to Dishy Mix who are CEOs or founders of technology companies who realize that there's not enough VC or energy in the universe for them to fully leverage the great stuff they came up with. And you're on to a new idea about how you might do that, that could be helpful for others.
Yeah, you know, it's been an extraordinary, extraordinary revelation for us. So we've been working at this for over 13 years. And all along the way, our aspiration was not just that we would be able to make a return for ourselves and our retirement accounts and our investors, but that we really would leave something behind us that was valuable for the world. So, you know, without sort of beating our chest too much about that, the problem was that distributing, as you point out, distributing this to the world takes an enormous amount of money or really big control.
Even However, giving it away takes a lot of money.
Absolutely. But you know what? The Creative Commons started in 2003, specifically around copyrights, and they, within just a few years, had 500 million submissions. This was a phenomenon. Why? Because people realized that open architecture created creative innovation, and that if people could use each other's work appropriately, as per the Creative Commons, they could leverage it, and it would become bigger. Because you see, if I share the fish I caught with you, I am worse off because I don't have the fish I gave you. But if I share the idea that I had with you, I don't lose any part of the value of that idea. You just gain it. And then I gain on what you did with it. So that idea of sharing was brilliant, but here was the rub. There was no possibility for using patents, because patents are by nature protective of an idea's utility. And what the Creative Commons has done, and it's not released yet, and we are very much looking forward to working with the Creative Commons, we are going to go, in all likelihood, I should say, for safety's sake, we are speculating that we are going to go in the new year open source under the Creative Commons doctrines in our copyrights, our scientific works, and the new one, the patents. And this is going to allow us to say, look, in this group of areas, we're going to protect these and say, you can go do stuff with our invention, our patent, but you owe us money if you make money. But in all of these other areas, like education, for example, you can take mind time, you can run with it, you can make money, you can build products, and you can do it for free. All we want to do is to make sure that in some of these fields of use, as they call them, we get a chance to make the return on our investment of all of the sort of many, many years that we've invested and our investors have invested in us. So this new idea of distribution, which allows us to use our patents and not lose them, protect them, but give our invention, give our ideas to the rest of the world to actually play with and to amplify and grow on. You know, frankly, we have conversations about it. It gives us goosebumps. We have no idea what people will do with MindTime in the future. But we are so excited because we know over the 13, 14 years we've been working at it, so much has evolved, so much has developed. 4 or 5 years from now, who knows? It could be extraordinary.
Here's what I want.
Yeah.
I want the first people to use the patent commons to open source your model in the field of education. And I want somebody to take all of the textbooks and put them into iPads. And when a student is learning about American history, depending on their MindTime archetype and their learning style, they get to choose from six different options their particular homework assignment, and they just have it on their iPad. They didn't have to carry any books or do anything like that. And then they get to excel and learn the information in a way that is perfect for them.
Absolutely. Susan, you know what? That's a beautiful, beautiful vision. And I will tell you, last year we worked with a high school up in Idaho, the Sage School in Ketchum, Idaho, actually in Haley, Idaho. And we taught the entire school population, both faculty and students, about MindTime. I heard the other day from the headmaster, Harry Weeks, and Harry wrote me a letter, and we had a long conversation afterwards, that basically said the kids, the students, had taken over, had put posters up on the walls describing the archetypes, had been teaching the faculty members and teachers how they needed to learn, and had then started forming their working groups, student with student, in collaborative pods where each of the thinking styles was present so they could actually execute. Isn't that amazing?
It's really good. I love that. And I mean, just even knowing, after you take the survey yourself, and I'm going to give you that URL one more time. It's mindtimemaps.com/start/adtech. Once you take the survey and you can say to someone, you know, I'm really a past thinker and I'd appreciate you giving me a lot of data points. It would be helpful for me in making the decision. Or, you know what? I really actually just want to know how you're going to execute this program before I could be comfortable in being a yes. You know, I mean, just it's fascinating to what's the vision of where you see this all going before I can say I'd be part of it. You know, it's like so simple.
Well, you know, to your audience, as you said, you know, CEOs and entrepreneurs and founders of companies, hey guys, this is about leadership.
Yes.
This is about leadership. This is about speaking to your audience in the language that they get because it's what they need because it's their survival system. That's simple.
So just to finish off the story today, I want you to appreciate the aspirational nature of the patent commons and what you're going to do. And I hope that some people will pick up on this idea. It's a universal framework for understanding people. And imagine if we could apply it to so many processes of
wherever
things that
there's
we're
people.
Doing. Right, exactly. And you took it out in the middle of the Black Rock Desert at Burning Man.
Yeah,
you created a mind shrine. Is that right?
It did.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, you know what? Sean Phillips, one of my partners who's been working with me for many, many years, he's a Burning Man junkie. He's been for years. Long, good track record, unbroken. So he invited me down in 2007. I hung out in the desert. I went, this is so cool. Hey, it's a closed ecosystem. It's a closed community. Wouldn't it be neat if, and of course, Sean had already gotten there. He was way ahead of me. So 2008, we went out to Black Rock and we built a 12,000 square foot human computer that allowed people essentially to take the profile. And then we asked them a series of polling questions, like survey questions about Black Rock, about the community, et cetera, about the country, about freedom, about the death penalty, all kinds of amazing questions. And because MindTime is very good at showing how your thinking style is driving your opinion, what happened was, as we posted the data in the Mind Shrine, we started to show people how it was their thinking that drove how they responded to the survey questions, and how you could understand why someone responded the way they did if you simply understood their thinking style. And there was one neat conversation I overheard. I'll tell you very briefly. A couple came in through different entrances into the Mind Shrine. They had different thinking styles. They answered the surveys. They came into the middle. They walked around. They looked at the data. And then I heard the conversation go, you know, I guess there's no way in the world that you can compete with your thinking when you know this. The only answer is to collaborate. and they gave each other this big hug. And it was just this beautiful, beautiful moment.
That's a tonal burner moment, isn't it?
Yeah. So anyway, that was the Mayan Shrine. It was a wild time. It was brilliant. We dealt with 65 mile an hour winds and this massive human computers shaking in the wind. Wild, but so much fun. So much fun. And it's so good to see people embrace the concept and get it. And without reading a book about it or without listening to me, they just got it.
I'm really looking forward to hearing what you think about the MindTime model. And after you've taken the survey, I'd love to get some feedback on whether you think this was something that you could apply to your business, or if you want to learn more about the cognitive targeting. I'm sure Jason Burnham and the telepathy group would love to talk to you more about that. Post your comments on my Facebook page. Just go to Facebook and search for Dishy Mix, all one word. You'll find me. You'll see that image you're used to seeing of me. And if you want a copy of It's All About Time, How People Work and Why Some Do It Better by John Fury, he's going to give me a couple copies to give out to my fans. So go to the Facebook page at Dishy Mix and just post your interest and desire, and I'll pick a couple of you and mail you out a book. John, thanks so much for coming on the show, and I'm looking forward to doing it all over again at AdTech New York.
Yeah, me too, Susan. It's going to be a great pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. It's an amazing model, and I feel fortunate to even know about it. It's actually been, I would say, a life-altering concept that I've been able to integrate very easily into what I do to make my life a little easier when I'm talking to people. So thank you.
Well, that's made my day. Thank you, Susan.
That's my pleasure. All right. Well, I'm your host, Susan Bratton. Thanks for listening to this episode of Dishy Mix. I hope you found it a pure pleasure. I hope you have a great day, and I'd look forward to connecting with you next week. Take care.
Find more great shows like this on personallifemedia.com.